Welcome to Blooming Profits, a podcast by YouTuber Bear Flower Farm, where we talk about all topics related to running a profitable and sustainable flower farm. I'm your host, Jessie, and in each episode, we'll be joined by fellow flower farmers who are eager to share their insights, experiences, and tips for success. All of our interviews are recorded for YouTube, and we encourage you to check out the Bear Flower Farm YouTube channel for visuals and even more beneficial content. You can find the link in the show notes. Today, we have Marie on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me, Marie. You are also a fellow YouTuber, flower farmer. You have goats. I'd love for you to introduce yourself to everyone by telling us who you are, where you live, and your farm setup.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me here today. Yeah, so I'm located in the very southwestmost tip of Canada, so very southern. It's actually fairly mild here, which is surprising to a lot of people. So I'm in Langley, British Columbia, so near Vancouver, BC, and we farm on about 4.3 acres. We do growing and flowers. That's one major part of what we do, but we also have a little bit of a diverse farm setup as a small scale farm. So we also produce pastured organic eggs for our community, and we raise little miniature dairy goats.
That is a really interesting combination, but you also come from an interesting background, if I understand correctly. You were a florist at a certain point, is that correct?
Yeah, it actually goes even farther back because I've basically been in flowers my whole life because I grew up in the commercial and wholesale aspect of flowers. So I grew up on a flower farm. It's generational, like my grandpa, my opa, was a grower. My great opa was one in Holland. At some point, I went from working in the family business, which was much more production oriented, shipping out to throughout Western Canada, so more like scale, more wholesale. And I got interested in floral design. And so I started to pursue that. So I trained a little bit in Holland at the outset, just because we have a lot of relatives there, lots of connections. I worked in different sort of settings, all of which were retail based. And that was also just to kind of get sort of in key with the in tune with the trends at the time, and then came back home and got a job at a local flower shop. And that's kind of how I started. And since then, I've worked at a few different places. I say I became a farmer florist by accident, because when we moved to the farm, I wasn't planning to sell flowers at all. That just wasn't even in the trajectory. So it just kind of happened by accident. I bought myself one time an impulse purchase, which is a major purchase for me. It was like a package of dahlia tubers, and it was like $20 or something. But for me, it was so frivolous at the time. And so I remember buying that for myself when I decided, well, it'll be my birthday present. But even then, I still had the idea like, well, I'll just have to sell some flowers to pay these off. It's such a big deal. Dutch person, right? So anyways, I started growing these flowers, and I set up like a little roadside flower stand to try sell a few things, and I was hooked. I made sale the first day, and yeah, that was it. That was the rest is kind of history.
That's so interesting. I did not realize that you basically grew up in the flower industry, and I feel like I have so many questions I can ask on that. I'm going to reserve myself and ask, I feel, what is probably going to be the most interesting for other people outside of myself. What have you seen has changed or evolved over the past couple of decades?
Yeah, what has changed? And so, like, for where I'm based here, Canada is actually, there's parts of Canada that is a huge producer for cut flowers and a major exporter. And I think it's maybe a little bit different in a lot of the states. Where I live here in southern BC, this is a huge hub for floral production. It has been for a long time. Even my opa was a commercial scale grower. So it might be a little bit different, but what I personally, which these are more personal feelings, that some of the things that I've seen that have changed are the movement of production of a lot of things out of the country. For me personally, one of those major ones are cut flower roses, because when I was growing up, there was a lot of rose production here. My father was also a rose grower, And so over time, just seeing the imports coming in and sort of taking the place of the locally produced roses, for me, is probably one of the more sadder things of what I've seen change.
I didn't realize that Canada also produced a lot of roses, but my understanding is that the reason why South America is such a big rose producer now is because of U.S. domestic tax laws that made it really unappealing to grow domestic roses. And so as a result, like Colombia and Ecuador kind of became at the forefront. And I wonder if that tax law actually really had implications for Canadian growers too, right?
I think bigger than that possibly is just the competition of wages and production costs. And we're talking like here where I am, even though it's a mild climate, I mean, we're talking greenhouse production. So heated greenhouses through a lot of the year. So just the offsetting those costs by growing in a warmer climate. So what ended up happening was at the time, we were selling a lot of our own roses throughout Western Canada. We used to supply the Overweighty Food chain, which is like a grocery store chain here. So shipping into a whole bunch of different grocery stores throughout, you know, BC and Alberta. And the import roses just were of a different caliber. They were what the customers were starting to choose. So what we were getting from our customers, who were the floral department managers of various grocery stores, it was the head sizes on the import roses, which were much bigger than we could produce necessarily here for maybe a similar production cost. It was just sort of that competition of that. The customers were actually choosing the imports, whether they knew it or not. That is what they were picking off the shelves. And so we were just reducing the production locally as a result and going into trying other cash crops like hydrangeas and things like that.
Did you find yourself picking flowers to grow when you ultimately became a farmer florist based off of like some of the stuff that you saw and experienced as a child growing up in the industry, or was it really shaped by just like modern day and your experience in working in floristry?
Overall, I would say the major cut flowers that are in the industry like now are probably the same. It is just that the production locations have changed. So I'm still seeing a lot of the standard cuts like Alstroemeria, Gerbera, roses, like we talked about, all kind of the major ones. And then a lot of like the seasonal sort of summer field crops, whether they're coming locally, like Carthamus, like safflower, things like that. These days, a lot of those are coming in off of warmer countries. But yeah, I would say a lot of those are still the same. And there's maybe been a small resurgence of some of the, I don't know if I would say heirloom flowers, but kind of like grandma's gardens flowers, like some of the ones that you and I are probably dabbling in. There's maybe been a small resurgence of those just because people like us have gotten more into growing and getting into more of the seasonal production of what we could actually be growing and providing locally. So there's maybe been a rising popularity. There's been some lovely like varieties like the zinnias, for example. There's so many new lovely varieties that are hitting kind of some of the trendier colors for the next group of purchasers. So maybe there's been some changes there. But overall, like in the majority industry, I'll call it, yeah, I think that the key players are still the same ones. It's just sometimes that the production locations have changed.
That's just so interesting to hear, because oftentimes we're kind of stuck in our local flower farming world and we don't really think about just the flower industry as a whole is really global and based off of that mass production that you're talking about. We're just like a tiny, tiny sliver of it. So I feel like I personally don't get a lot of information about that piece of it, partially because I'm not necessarily seeking it, but I just feel like that we're in this era of just a lot more choice and variety for people who love flowers. And that's always a good thing when people have more things to choose from.
And I think, again, like there's probably a slight difference between like you and I and our locations, because as we were talking about, where I'm located is like very major producer. It's so competitive pricing. There's lots of things being produced here locally, whereas In a lot of the states, those same things would probably be imported, whether they're from here or from somewhere else. I think that the role that we're playing in our, I would say, our niche markets as farmer florists and whatever, because that's a fairly broad term. So whatever that sort of covers for different types of farmers is still offering something really unique and special, but it may be even more related just to the customer experience, even as much as the type of flower. Yeah, the experience and the design aesthetic sometimes, and sort of the direct-to-consumer sales, which is different from the traditional way of how most markets are running, where it's not, you're missing that link between the buyer and the grower themselves, right? Or the farmer and the buyer.
And I'm glad you talked about that experience piece, because it really is broken up into, well, you can have on-farm experiences, but also just the experience that you provide in terms of how you design a bouquet is also a differentiator here. And I would think that your background as a florist obviously gives you an advantage around that. So can you talk a little bit, well, first, just how did you end up making the transition to becoming a farmer florist? I follow you on YouTube and it seems like you're enjoying it. You've learned some lessons along the way, but I love to hear just how did you get to this place right now?
Yeah, you know, like I say, sometimes it's a bit of an accident. I'm totally hooked for sure. I'm totally hooked. I love it. But I think a lot of that has to do just with the artistic process of it. So it's like a lot less practical of an answer, because just artistically, I'm so drawn to designing out of the gardens. There is such a massive difference for that experience for me versus like being able to just walk into the flower cooler and pick out whatever is in there that I need to complete a cohesive design. Or if I'm at the flower auction and I'm buying like my buckets and I'm buying my bouquet batch, then according to a recipe, I can just get whatever color I need, whatever flower type I need. And so having started to grow my own flowers and trying to be completely self-reliant at it as well is such a wholly different experience. So tied into the weather patterns, the limitations, and the challenges that lie in that, and having to kind of work within those limitations has been a really neat experience. I've learned a lot as a designer. It's actually, I highly recommend it, because I think it has been my best design teacher that I've ever had, has just been stuck with whatever I could grow and having to work with whatever ingredients I can get, right? And can scrape up sometimes, literally, because sometimes when I first started and I wasn't growing enough of the right stuff, I was like running through my forest and just trying to find whatever I could use, right? That all to me is less practical, though. It's more tied to just this like amazing artistic experience of it.
You had said that you got hooked basically because you bought dahlia tubers. You grew them. I assume you grew them well because you were able to sell them. So let's actually talk a little bit about just what you do right now in terms of in a farmer florist model. The first question for you in this regard is, where are you selling your flowers? Is it just a farm stand? Do you guys do like CSAs or?
This is the amazing thing about this niche market, because there are so many options. Like no one farmer florist business is going to necessarily look the same. And that's really neat. Like that's a really, to me, that's really exciting thing that there's so many options and it can be catered to one's strengths as well. And there's so many options within the floral marketing, whether you go into just purely growing and production and wholesale, or you go into direct to consumer niche sales, or you go into like events or hosting events like UCUT or whatever. There's just so many options. So for what I've done, and this has slowly been like, I do have a pretty good idea just coming out of the various places that I've worked and the time I've put in the industry. I have a pretty good idea of what I like and I don't like. But even then, I've still been sort of slowly trying. I'll try things and I'll kind of adjust every year. So every year I'll sit down and look at what we did and look at what was the most profitable, what was the most worthwhile, and then we'll adjust for the next year. As it is right now, I'm growing on about a quarter acre. My hoop houses are 40 foot by 20 foot. I have two of those. The main field are 100 foot rows. We're just going down actually to 5 rows. So I've got 500 feet there. And then the rest of it is landscape perennial garden. So more of like a cottage garden style. So that's sort of my growing size. And then for my sales, I focus, just given my interest and my speciality in design, I focus heavily on direct to consumer and things that are more of a high style, things that feature my design work. So I've slowly, like I started out with the flower stand on the roadside, like I mentioned, and I still use that, but I've slowly de-emphasized that because I've started to develop a reputation for kind of a unique design style and a more high-end design style, something slightly different about what I do. So that I get more customers coming to me just with ordering, like direct ordering. And I focus heavily on what I call seasonal events in flowers. So whether it's like Mother's Day, Thanksgiving, Christmas, I focus heavily on those particular, usually it's like the one day, but I focus heavily on those for the majority of my sales at this point in time, because just being able to focus in on those specific days and get the most sales in the shortest amount of time versus having to be constantly running like the flower stand through the whole season. Just in terms of, as you probably know, but just this, there's this balancing act between doing all of it. So being the grower and the florist, it's kind of crazy. It's kind of a crazy thing to take two separate careers or occupations and combine them into one thing. So I have found that focusing in on the seasonal events, really, it's like my 80-20, and it helps me to give me the downtime that I need in between those times to be able to actually grow things, because otherwise I can get so busy trying to design all the time and do the florist thing that I will end up like having no flowers because I didn't have time to grow them. So there's always that little bit of conflict there. So that's kind of where my focus has been. Has slowly grown into more just like custom orders, a little bit of sympathy work. I don't do weddings for the most part. It's just not my favorite. I love design. I love design. I just don't want to deal with the scheduling with brides. It's the scheduling, and with the ages of my kids as well, this business has to sort of ideally fit my life. I don't want to lose my summer weekends every summer to doing weddings. So I've really honed in on those seasonal events. It also frees me up a bit more in the summer and going forward, as my kids have been getting to an age where we actually like hanging out with them and doing fun things with them, I can see taking the summers off as well, so that I'll just be working mostly on like the spring and winter and fall season going forward, I would think.
Looking for a reliable focal that sells well at farmers markets and can be grown throughout the entire growing season? Consider lilies. But the problem is finding them in affordable small quantities, so I'm here to plug that gap for the smaller scale grower. I'm offering lily bulbs in 25 and 50 unit increments throughout the entire growing season on bareflowerfarm.com, or you can check the show notes for a direct link. Now back to the show. I love the intentionality of what you just said in terms of the evolution. So Marie touched upon this, but she does have relatively young kids. So they obviously take up a portion of your time. And I think that that's even harder to find that balance with kids. And then you also have the goats. And then now you have a design and a growing business. I sometimes feel overwhelmed with just the growing piece of it. So to add the design element on feels like it really is two separate businesses, right? In the sense that like what you're doing for the design piece of it, even though you're taking the product from the growing, it's just two different types of activities and headspace, right? In terms of thinking too. I'd love to hear a little bit more just about the impact of the design piece on something more practical in terms of just, you said that you're in a very highly competitive area.
Like by competitive, what I mean is that I'm surrounded by commercial growers. So for me, if I want to say I want to start growing flowers, but I'm surrounded by like generational established growers who grow amazing flowers already, I'm trying to find a way for my products to stand out where I can price them where they need to be when I'm competing with very, like, I would say low pricing, because a lot of the things that I'm competing with are produced right here on a wholesale scale. So just the labor costs and everything, like, compared to what I do where I'm growing, kind of feels like sometimes I'm growing a million different things. And there's just it's just a different kind of time input. Having such a diverse crop management, it's really hard to compete on a particular crop. So I've decided I'm not gonna compete with them. And that's one of the reasons why I would be focusing on my skill sets in design, just to set myself apart.
Do you have a lot of, I guess, local competition when it comes to people selling direct to consumer?
Yes, because it seems like it's just been a bit of a trend in the last few years. There's more and more, always every year, there's more and more flower stands popping up, often with very, very low pricing. I don't necessarily always see that as competition, just because I think that there's room for everybody, in the sense that we're all of us who are doing this sort of small scale growing into a smaller clientele base, we are usually fairly specialized. And so I think like we all have a limit on how much we can produce physically ourselves. We have small farms, we're farming on smaller land. So we're kind of, I don't necessarily see us all competing with each other, because I think that we can all find our place there. But yeah, for sure. Like I still will, you know, nowadays I would be rethinking what I'm offering on my flower stand based on the fact that there's like 10 other flower stands on my street. Then I'm going to be again focusing on how can I set my products up to look unique and differently to sort of make them stand out from everything else.
That makes sense. So I'd love to hear more about, you have this model where you're really focusing on less and obviously charging a little bit more for those type of, we'll call like special event type of arrangements. So can you talk about the process? How does someone contact you? How far in advance are they contacting you? Do you deliver? Do they pick up? Like, what does that look like logistically?
I actually don't do delivery. I just have no interest in doing delivery. Because I hated it when I was a florist, and because I now, as sort of a one-woman show, I just can't afford to be driving around and doing that. But I think it could also work really well if somebody was wanting to set up like a regular delivery day. Maybe they just do like one day a week and that's their delivery day, and they made sure that they paid themselves, like charged the right price for it, and off they went. They could deliver enough volume in that one day, it could be really worthwhile. So it's just very dependent. I use my website to take my orders. I think that's really important. It's really important to me not to be on the phone, not to be handling a lot of email or other kinds of communications, because I just don't have time. So I have right away very quickly realized I needed to set my website up to handle those kinds of things. Between having to have like social media marketing and having a million different ways nowadays that customers could be contacting me, from like Instagram message to the Facebook page message, those ones for some reason too, I like never get them. So it's a real problem. Email, all that stuff. So I just can't, I mean, it's just me. I got to grow the flowers. I got to make the flowers. There needs to be systems in place where it's easy for my customers. They can get a little bit of customization with whatever they're ordering, but I don't have to be involved, and the order should just show up for me. So something else needs to do this, and it's not staff, because I don't have staff. So something else has to do it. So I send out a pre-order newsletter notification. I've been building my email list right from the beginning. That's very important, not to just rely on trying to sell something on Instagram or Facebook, because you don't have control about how many people are going to see your sales posts doing it that way. So I think it's important to be marketing on social media, but it's really, really important to have some way of building your own client database that you have control of, especially if, what if you got hacked? What if Instagram one day was just gone and you lost your entire customer base? So that's really important. And how I've done that with my website is, when I send a newsletter, I usually have a time frame for when the newsletter goes out, when I need the orders to come in. I'll limit my offerings. So for example, if it was Christmas wreaths, I might sell just two styles. I often will do an upsell price point. So I'll often have sort of a lower end and then a higher end price point. That's a little bit more skookum. And when they go in an order, they will have an option, some sort of customization. I think a little bit of customization is really important for their experience, but it also needs to be where I have sort of a limit on it, so that on my end, as in terms of production, it's like, okay, I've got five white ones, I got five red ones, right? I can just make them. It's not like I'm making a completely customized bespoke design every single time, because nobody can do that if they're being a farmer florist. So there's kind of this way of finding a balance between, for me, offering a unique boutique sort of florist service, but also the fact that I still need to have a production mindset with a lot of what I do. My website with the Christmas wreaths will let people pick whether or not they want a ribbon, and whether or not, or they'll be able to pick like from maybe five or six color options that I've already decided based on whatever I know that I have in good supply. I can limit the numbers on each of those palettes if I need to. If I had a problem with my purple straw flowers then that year, then maybe, you know, the sort of plum purpley sort of wreath style, I might not have as many, so I can have control of that. But it at least gives my customers sort of the ability to still feel like they have had sort of a custom experience.
I loved how you underscored the importance of your website, because I feel like when I go on to the Facebook groups, you often hear people who are waffling between, well, how important is it to have a website? Should I invest a lot of time and money into a website? And of course, you can sell without a website. But if you have a good functioning website, it can also make your life a lot easier. So it sounds like you're at a stage now where you can push everything just to your website, and you're not battling with like Venmo, PayPal, or cash, or whatever it is, right? And then an influx of messages from five different places, because I feel like that definitely gets overwhelming, especially once you start to build your business.
Overwhelming is the exact word. I don't know how anybody does it. Like I don't even list my phone number anymore, because I don't want people to phone me. Like, you can only get in touch with me by basically email. And if you do message me, there's a chance you won't hear back from me in a timely manner. And I've just had to let that be, because I just, when I'm in a busy week and I'm producing, like I'm working long days and I'm just producing and I've got my customers. By the way, that's the other part. I also limit pickup options. So I'm not trying to be a full service florist. And so as the grower and everything else, I can't have my customers just coming here whenever they want to, or within windows like that are too broad. So I limit my pickups. I try to make it work for most people. So I'll often do, for example, like for Christmas again, it'll often be only weekends. They can choose from four different weekends, right, leading up to Christmas. And then I maybe we'll offer like a Friday night or like a Thursday night, just in case, you know, for the people that are only available in the evening. But it's very limited, so that when I have customer pickups happening, hopefully I can just kind of be milling about doing a bit of work, but they're all going to come en masse within a particular time frame. I think sometimes maybe people don't think about these things at the outset, or we just don't realize till we've maybe done it the wrong way. So hopefully people can learn from some of my mistakes.
Well, I think that in the beginning, when you're first starting out, it's not like you're desperate, but you want to be accommodating because you want that business. And then after a certain point, you almost have the liberty of feeling courageous to say, no, I need to set boundaries. And I was actually talking to another flower farmer on one of these interviews about how she structures her CSAs, and similar to you, she doesn't give out her phone number. And I was like, what? And so immediately I removed my phone number from the emails, and it's totally fine. and people are all adults, right? So they can figure things out. And I think it is really important to set those boundaries because I've definitely felt overwhelmed when I didn't.
And you'll find your customers, right? Like I'm not for everybody. And my services, like how I offer things, is not for everybody. And some people might want more of a florist experience. And some people might want cheaper, like daffodils off of Flowerstand, and that's fine. So some people might need and want more communication than I can provide. But the people that will fit what I do, they'll find me and I'll find them. And you just have to not stress about, like, you can't possibly please everybody. You never will anyway. So you have to think about what's going to work the best for you and your limitations. And the fun thing is it's your business. So you get to decide, like, one of the funnest things for me, because I've put in all the grunt work. I've been the gopher in the flower shop. I've done it all. I've been the junior designer. I've been the one having to go run across the street to the funeral home through the traffic, like with a massive arrangement. I've had to do all of the stuff. So it's fun now to just be like, no, I'm not interested in that. I'm just not going to do it because this is my business and I'm going to make it how I want it to be. So with to a degree, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it is nice to be able to make those choices because it's your own business. You can cater it to what's going to work the best for you and be the most worthwhile.
Going back to this business model of focusing on these event holidays, would you say that a lot of your customers are repeat customers versus you having to search for new customers?
Yes, I definitely have my loyal customers at this point, and they're ready and waiting. And if I don't get my newsletter out fast enough because, you know, my kid is sick, they'll start contacting me to find out.
They're pounding at the door.
I mean, hopefully this is a tricky business. We're dealing with a perishable product. A lot of things can go wrong, and hopefully we're doing a good job and offering a quality experience and people will come back to us. And if they do, it's a sign that we're doing something right. I definitely have my longtime customers, and it's really enjoyable, and I love seeing them. I get to see them several times a year, and it's quite lovely.
I do want to take the time to pivot and actually talk about your YouTube channel. So that is how I found you. You are also a content creator and on YouTube. I actually found you through your Dahlia video. I think it was like post-harvesting and everything just related to making your dahlias live longer in the vase. And that was super helpful for me. But I would love to hear, how did you end up becoming a content creator on YouTube, and how's that been treating you so far?
I'm laughing because, like, my husband is the one who pushed me into this. It's been really fun. I have been doing social media marketing through Facebook and Instagram for the farm's sake for quite a few years now, and I have struggled with Instagram to be able to share the way that I want to share. So being able to do long format content, like through the videos with YouTube, has been really nice. It's really, like, I'm pretty new at this still, and it just feels like I'm finally able to breathe a little bit, and it's really fitting well. It's kind of a side shoot that I wasn't planning to get into because of my florist focus with my business, because a lot of what we ended up doing with our farm and a lot of what we talk about is flowers, because I'm obsessed with flowers. So I talk about the flowers way more than I do, like, the chickens. So as I've been having a social media presence on Facebook and Instagram, I've slowly just acquired, like, a farmer florist particularly, but I've acquired, like, a following of especially people that are maybe newer to it and they're trying to learn or they're looking for design ideas. And I've started to get to the point where I was overwhelmed with the amount of questions that were coming at me that were not my target customer. They were fellow growers or new farmer florists or what have you. And so for a little while, the idea had been sort of starting to grow that I really enjoyed teaching. I was getting a lot of questions that were more related to that through my social media, even though I wasn't trying to, when we started to think about, well, why don't we think about getting into more educating and sharing more of my knowledge base, because I have a knowledge base between my commercial production and bouquet department, like wholesale production level of flowers, which really suits farmer floristry, from that all the way to higher end design. now I'm sort of positioned in a place where I'm actually drawing from both sets, both knowledge bases to be able to do what I do now. And I think it's a kind of a unique position that I'm in with a unique set of experiences, having been in this industry and so many facets of this industry for so long. So it was sort of like, how could we get into education? And we ended up kind of settling on YouTube. He kind of pushed me into YouTube a little bit, but we thought we would try it versus trying to just set up courses and sell them on my own. I am really enjoying it. It's very new for me, so we'll see how it goes in the long term as a venture that actually works for me to get into education. But it's been very, very good fit for me.
First of all, if you haven't checked out Marie's YouTube, it's called Florist on Farms. And I think that you are very uniquely positioned with your background, both as a designer and like the industry that you grew up with. And I think that there's definitely a lack of content in that space that you're fulfilling right now. And so I've been following you, I think, for a couple of months. Your subscriber count is definitely going up. And I remember, like, back in the day when I was around your area, it just felt like that there's so much potential because clearly people are clicking on your content. But the algorithm still hasn't picked you up to the point where people are, or where it's showing it to a much broader group of people. And that was actually also why I wanted you to come on, because I think you have so much good stuff to share. It's not like I have a really big platform, but hopefully more people will be able to find out about you. And I think that one of the videos that you did recently about like the peach tone, and you just showed all the different color palettes you had, that was such a helpful video for me too. And I just think that that's just one where if you're really into the design element of making bouquets and understanding how colors can work together, Marie does a really good job of showing you inspiration between like all the photographs that she's taken and put into the video. But I'm sure that for you, that is like second nature.
If you do it long enough, it's purely instinct. But also, like, we're all learning. Like, I'm still learning and I learn every day. And it's one of the amazing things about being in a creative sort of business is that we're all always able to constantly be learning from each other and draw new inspiration. And sometimes we need a little bit of fresh inspiration as well. I hope my channel is helpful. I've seen so much need for knowledge in various ways. And one of the biggest things that I have been focusing on is sort of trying to save farmer florists' lives, I guess, because I've experienced how many hours it is. I have experienced how much work it is and time input to be growing. And we don't have time to be standing around and slowly making bouquets. We don't have time to be accidentally growing the wrong colors and then struggling to be putting a beautiful bouquet together because we just didn't know at the outset. So I just hope that my videos help people to get started on the right foot, to be able to just breeze into production and bouquet making in an easier way.
There's definitely this romantic aspect when people who have never had growing or floristry experience start out, like including myself, and you're like, yeah, I'm going to be a farmer florist. And then you start getting overwhelmed with the growing piece of it, or you don't even like the designing piece of it. I would say that the design piece for me is my weakest piece of everything. And it's not like I don't enjoy design. I just honestly haven't had the time to upskill myself. And I think that in year one, it became really clear to me that I should actually just focus on being a grower. And I actually see a lot of people who come into this new also struggle with that, but perhaps not making the realization that they're two very separate specialties that are really hard to nail down at like to a point where you can be really great at both within like a short period of time, right? You almost need to dedicate focus to one or another. So I guess from that perspective, you kind of had the upper leg in the design piece, but I know that you've also been pretty honest in some of your videos around just like the mistakes that you made in year one. I think you like grew too much of like different varieties and different colors, right?
As we all do, as we all get on the seed catalogs and we just get really excited because flowers are beautiful. Yeah, it was funny to me that I made that mistake because my initial exposure within the industry is purely production. In that setting, we're looking for, like, my crew, they needed to be making 50 bouquets an hour. And
wow.
So, yeah, 50, like, medium-ish size bouquets an hour is, like, what we're producing. And I know exactly what the elements are that need to do that, from, like, the product selection, the colors, how to set it up, everything. So I don't know why that just didn't apply when I was ordering seeds.
Because the seed catalogs came and you have photos.
But I mean, you touched on it. It's two very different areas of expertise. And I hope that people can give themselves enough grace and enough time, because I think given a little time, whether you come in stronger as a grower or whether you come in stronger as a designer, either way, like, both are achievable, especially if you are able to hone in on, like, your focus areas as you have done. We don't all need to be a wedding designer. We don't all need to know how to make a corsage, right? It could be a mistake for some farmer florists to go in for that kind of education. They maybe just need to know how to put a good display together, make catchy color palettes that are going to display well, right? Have that display component down, know what colors go good together, some basic color palettes that are going to sell the best, and how to quickly put them together. We don't all need to have a massive, excessive design skill set, but if we do want to go into weddings or something, which is a really exciting area to get into, can be very good, then it would probably be beneficial to put some time into getting that education, just to save some heartache and frustration, if anything else.
As you head into the 2024 season and you put your farmer florist hat on, because now you have a couple of seasons under your belt, you know what you want to potentially design with, especially around those floral holidays. Are there any flowers for you that are like, yes, I must double down, triple down on these, like any of your top favorites?
So that's actually, like, very insightful question. And because I think a lot of farmer florists get caught up in thinking they need to grow certain things, that they can't do well unless they're growing a certain variety of a certain thing. And I think that if you just break it down simply into just having some sort of showy flower, like a dahlia in your bouquet, something that has show, and then having enough fillers and foliages and sort of accent flowers, I think that you can make a pretty nice bouquet pretty simply. So it's hard for me. I love all flowers. So for me to pick, like, a favorite, this is really hard.
But I love that answer, because that is such a practical and strategic answer. Also keeping in mind that you have no control over Mother Nature.
If anything, I've added a bit more variety to the gardens in the last couple of years. And that's just because I've started to focus more and more on education as well. So it's been a very strange balance to try to find between growing simply, growing with simplicity, I'll say, with less variety to make bouquet production easy, because that's really important. And then what I'm doing now in my garden is almost like I'm going in the opposite direction of what I tell people to do, because I also am, like, always look for different new things to try out, and I'm trialing things all the time, and I'm kind of going more and more into teaching as well, and it's starting to become more important in what I'm growing. So it's like a completely sort of different focus and growing plan for that.
I totally hear you, and I would be remiss if I didn't ask, one of the things that we're seeing getting pushed a little bit more, especially those who are really trying to have a more profitable mindset in terms of operating the growing part of the business, is scaling down on variety, including not growing a lot of what we call filler. And so I'd love to hear your view on that as a farmer florist.
That's really interesting. Very interesting. And I'm curious if we're talking about people who are producing final, like, market bouquets, or if mm-hmm. it's more wholesale. Okay. Yeah, I would say that fillers are super important, whether we're talking just very generally of, like, foliage or filler flowers that are, like, a spray shape that can fill a bouquet. They're massively important, and also they will make life easier because they'll fill out the bouquet. They make it easier to achieve a nice shape really quickly. The foliages and the fillers are massively important. And one mistake that I think that I see a lot of newer farmer florists making is growing too many of the focal flowers. I've seen a lot of bouquets where there's just either too much color. So it's like a riot of color, which again, I mean, I've been there. I just didn't think about that when I was ordering my seeds, but can be chaotic looking, or having too many filler flowers. So the bouquet is like all competing with itself because there's not the bridge flowers, whether in color, but in this case, I'm talking textures from the filler flowers. There's not like a resting point within the bouquet to allow the focal flowers to shine. It's just all focal flowers and they're just all competing for attention. So from a purely design perspective, I also think filler flowers are really important. But like the other part of what we do is when we're setting a price point and we're selling a bouquet is to our customer, one of the biggest components of what we're doing is selling perceived value. If you were to make a bouquet of say 10 stems of mostly focal flowers, it may not be able to have a low enough price point because these are more expensive flowers we're talking about, then the price point is going to potentially be higher than what it looks like. And that is why traditionally you would be mixing your ingredients so that you'd be able to put in things that are less expensive to produce, so that you're getting the same sort of size look, which is what the customer is seeing is color and sort of size, but your cost is a lot lower, so you can keep your price point lower. So it's just a more competitive set of ingredients.
Where I've seen this be successful for certain growers is there's obviously a certain customer who is looking for a relatively lower price point. Like, I'm assuming you're not selling your Mother's Day arrangements for $20. Like, yours are a lot more effort and there's actually like art behind it, right? Like, when we're talking about these $20 market bouquets filled with mostly focals and very little filler, there's no expectation of a design element. And these are people who are regularly buying flowers to put onto their kitchen table or whatever it is at a relatively reasonable price point. But I'm starting to realize that there's this piece where it's obviously more labor on the growing side to grow a lot of different things, including filler. And then that is potentially offset by the fact that when you're now making a bouquet, now you have to put in more premium stems. So I think as I go into year three, like this is not a year three thing, but I can see myself in year four and year five, I would actually add more foliage and filler back into my field because at that point I've streamlined other things that can allow me to kind of weather that cost, that extra cost of growing more variety in the field. And I do feel like it makes my bouquets not only perceived with higher value, but definitely a lot more profitable for me than kind of putting in, even if it's zinnias, right, which are technically not like a high valued focal, but it's a lot easier for me to grow something like mountain mint than it is for something like zinnias. And the mountain mint is definitely going to make it feel more full. So I'm still trying to figure out what that balance looks like. And I feel like I've leaned a lot more heavily on the focal piece of it, but also understanding that for you, your customer base is obviously looking for an art piece, essentially, right? And you need filler to achieve that.
Yeah, there's artistic arguments for the filler as well as just practical ones. And I definitely hear what you're saying about just trying to grow more simply, basically is what I'm hearing you say, with people who are opting to maybe just eliminate the fillers entirely or almost entirely just because it's so much crop maintenance to be growing so many different things. And I definitely hear that. And that's definitely one of the kind of the dances that we're doing as the grower trying to grow so many different things. And that's where it's really important, I think, to be, if you are trying to do that, which is what I do, is I still lean into more of like a, even for my flower stem bouquet is still a sort of, it's almost like a traditional, almost a grocery store, a set of ingredients, really. I think that's where it's important to try to grow as simply as possible. And one of the ways to be able to achieve that is to just limit your color palette. What I have learned to do quite quickly by doing it wrong is that is to just focus. Basically, I grow into two color palettes, and I go into like the orangey kind of colors, or I lean into like the pinky purples. And of what I grow, I can make every weekend, I can have a very different bouquet experience on the florist, and I try to have like two or three different palettes on the weekend. But I'm able to do that because of my color choices, especially working with like peach colored flowers, flowers that are versatile enough to go into different palettes, and they can flip flop into pinks, or it could flip flop into oranges. I'm able to kind of still, again, sort of sell a little bit more of an experience to my customer base, but still keep things simpler in the garden. That's one way where I've simplified in that way is that I haven't eliminated the fillers themselves, but I've eliminated having a million different colors. So if, mm-hmm. for example, somebody comes to me for, they want a white bouquet, I can't make a white bouquet most of the time. So there are certain things where I've just cut myself right out of that. I just can't, like, I don't sell white bouquets for the most part. And if a customer wanted to come to me and try to order special order, like a white bouquet, I just don't have white flowers. Like, I just don't grow them. It eliminates those small losses in potential sales. But to me, that's not really a big deal, because the most important thing is just producing simply and enough of something that I can just kind of mass produce it on my small scale. That's kind of probably my way of handling simplifying without actually eliminating the fillers themselves.
I had yet to hear of someone say that, so that was really insightful for me. And obviously, I just, again, going back to the point around free content on YouTube, there's not a lot of voices like yours out there that are coming from that perspective. I think we're starting to hear more voices coming from the profitability perspective. And obviously what that lacks is kind of this design component piece that you're talking about. So really love that you shared that. We're already at the 1 hour mark, Marie. Thank you so much for your generous time. Where can people find you both on social media and YouTube or wherever else you want to be found?
Where I want to be found. Yeah,
exactly. Keyword want.
Yeah, I'm hiding in my little farm, so just as long as I can hide behind my hedge, right? No. So on YouTube, it's Florists on Farms. And I did that intentionally because I wanted YouTube to be bigger than just my own little farm. But our farm business is called Van H Acres. So I'm different things in different places. I also have a Facebook group that I set up that's also called Florists on Farms. It's a somewhat sister group to my YouTube channel. It was more of a place for me to kind of create a community for these kinds of topics and for people to ask questions. So that's on Facebook. So we talk a little bit more about like pricing and things like that in there. And then I have, from the rest of it, in terms of Instagram, it's my actual farm business page. So if you want to like snoop on what I'm doing in terms of my farm business, or see the baby goats as well. Although the baby goats will be coming to YouTube soon, because we're about to start that, which is why it's great we're doing this interview today, because I have like the first due date. It's in like 4 days.
Oh my God.
It's going to be like insanity for about a month. But so on Instagram, it's Van H Acres. And it's the same on Facebook in terms of my farm business page. And then I'm also on Pinterest, actually. I created like a handy little resource on Pinterest. I kind of made it for myself, but it's really handy. It's a portfolio of all my market bouquets. And it just was cool to be able to put them all in a board where on like Instagram or Facebook, you lose things. Like they go underneath, right? Under the layers. So on Pinterest, it's also Florists on Farms. And I'm putting a few things on there, but one of the biggest things that I'm excited about is you can go on and there's a portfolio of all of my past market bouquets sorted out by the season. Just kind of see like color inspiration and see what's seasonal, what's in season at the same time.
I think a lot of people would love to see that. So I will definitely link that in your other contact information in the show notes. Again, Marie, this was awesome. And I can't wait to see the other content that you're going to put out soon.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much.